Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. I'm John, and as always, I'm joined by the Jupiter rising star herself, Danielle Caroli. What's up?
What's up, John?
Oh, you know, I tell ya, we're so current right now with this intro. It's nuts. I just got done with a road trip to go watch the solar eclipse with my family. Just a decision last minute, and we just got home, and it was great. It was a good time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's, you know, I gotta say, the sheeple out there, Danielle, these people that just believe everything the media tells them. You know, they're like, oh, don't look at it with your bare eyes. You know, make sure you have the special glasses. I stared at that thing for like 5 minutes and I'm fine. I can see great.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, it's fine. Or maybe my eyes just feel this way because I drove for like 6 hours. But no, in all seriousness, it was a cool experience. Alice actually had a good time wearing the glasses and looking up, and it was super stressful as a parent to be like, make sure that they were like glued on her face the whole time. Like, you've only got one set of eyeballs, kid. Like, let's not mess this up. But it was really great. We drove up to my uncle's place, his farm, and quickly found out that for some reason my daughter is petrified of cows all of a sudden.
Well, you knew that.
Yesterday?
I knew that.
Well, yeah, you did. It's,
and that's all that matters, obviously.
I mean, but it's weird though, because yesterday at my new gig, they have cows there, and she was feeding them snacks and stuff, and she was loving it. But today, maybe because it was like an actual like dairy farm with just a bunch of cows in a freestyle, maybe that's why she freaked out.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. But maybe it's the colors. Maybe they're slightly bigger.
It could be. You know, she went from Jerseys to Holsteins, so.
Maybe she just has, like, really good taste.
Maybe. She was telling my Uncle Gary. She's like, I want to go home and feed the goats now.
I'm
like, okay. Aww. Sorry, Uncle Gary. She's a goat kid.
That is good. Amazing.
Yeah, it was good to visit, and it was good to drive for funsies. It was just like the most sporadic thing. Tierney literally was like, "Hey, do you want to go see the eclipse?" Like, up in where Uncle Gary is, and I was like, "Sure." She must have caught me in a good mood because usually I'm like, "No." I was like, "Sure, why not?" So we drove up and drove back. It was a good time. Did you get to enjoy the eclipse?
I was actually working the eclipse.
Well, so, were you like a bouncer and you're like, hey, nobody passed the velvet rope. The eclipse is working here. Just watch from a distance. No photography.
Make sure you're wearing your glasses.
Yeah.
So we had an eclipse viewing party at the garden. And so, because it is not during our normal seasonal schedule, we did not have the typical staff that we usually have at the garden. So the office staff had to step in and do the tickets and the greeting and handing out glasses and parking for the event. So we were out doing that, greeting everybody, and then watched the eclipse as well. So it was fairly cool, and I have to say it was really bizarre because everybody came into the garden, I'm talking hundreds of people came into the garden happy, but when they left It was like they were on cloud nine. Everybody was smiling as they were leaving, waving, thanking us
Really?
that we were doing it. Yeah, it was, there was a definite shift in everyone's attitude.
Really.
I know you missed that one, but.
I have to say, the drive up, because it's a gorgeous day here in New York. It was in the 60s, beautiful out, not a cloud in the sky here in good old Fort Montgomery. And as we were getting closer and closer, the clouds start to form and form and form. And I'm like, oh no. I can see Tierney getting all nervous because she's like a huge weather nerd. She likes, the planets and stuff like that. Like, this is her wheelhouse, right? This is her thing. So she was like so excited, and it was getting cloudier and cloudier. And I was like, oh no, it's not gonna happen. I'm like sitting there, like, why wouldn't my Uncle Gary tell me it's a cloudy day here? So, but we got there, and as it happened, it cleared off enough that you were able to see and experience. So it was a good time.
Awesome. That's great. No, it really was really cool to be a part of, I have to say.
So, how about your farm? How's everything going on over there? You guys surviving?
I mean, sure. We're surviving, mostly. We had our first milk test of the year last
Ooh.
weekend, so that was great. I think I had 2 does over 12 pounds. I have to look at the sheets
Sick.
when we go downstairs, but 2 does under or over 12 pounds for their daily production. So they're just putting it in the pail. I am in this weird lull and I'm going to hate it in a couple of days because we finally got the kids down to 3 times a day bottles. So I have probably roughly 3 or 4 days left where I don't have to go to the barn and do a late night 10 30, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock feeding. And then I have 2 more does due to kid, and they're due in the next day or two, honestly. And so once they kid, it'll start all over again. So I'm really liking the idea because it still hasn't really, really kicked in of a full night's sleep. I don't even know with the weekend and different things going on. I don't really even know if I've gotten a full night's sleep, but in theory, I can get one right now. But give me 2 days, give me 4 days, and I'm going to be back to feeding babies and that midnight feeding. So I have 2 really anticipated does kidding to end my kidding season. But at the same time, I'm very much enjoying that. Everybody's on the bar, everybody gets fed 3 times a day, and having this disruption for potentially probably like 5 more kids. I'm just over it, but maybe they'll be cute and pretty and I'll be reinvigorated in that. But right now, I was enjoying maybe an extra hour of sleep a day and
Dude, I feel you.
happen.
I feel you.
Yeah, so that's pretty much, I mean, that's the fun stuff. And then I also this weekend went to UConn's Goat Day, where I led workshops on showmanship, and it was just such a cool event to be a part of. You have all of these kids, mostly from Connecticut, but also Massachusetts, New York, probably other states as well, coming. Plus, you have a few adults coming and just learning about dairy goats and all different aspects. I mean, there's also meat goats, but we're going to pretend that they're important too.
Oh,
Just
shots
kidding.
fired.
But all these things about dairy goats, I mean, there was biosecurity panels, there was evaluating dairy goats, there was medical things from like artificial insemination and embryos to what drugs to have on hand to lectures with about performance programs. Just a great day of learning for all of these future, I mean, they're all youth and dairy goats, so future members of our industry in terms of allowing it to grow and prosper and for years to come. And so a really cool thing to be a part of and got to work with them. I mean, Connecticut just has a great showmanship program anyway, but got to work with some really good kids working hard on their showmanship skills and hopefully help them a little bit. And I can't wait to see them in the ring. I think some of them are going to nationals, so that's exciting for them. But I also know that they'll be competing in their 4-H shows and different other shows and showmanship, particularly. And can't wait to see them working hard in the ring and bringing out their goats and trying to do their best.
Yeah, that's awesome. I gotta maybe next year or something I'll go to that and check it out. But yeah, it sounded like it was a good time. I was unfortunately working this goat day from this year, but it looked really cool and hope everybody got something out of it. And yeah, it was pretty awesome. Over here, we are kind of like in a lull where we're just kind of focusing on getting everything bounced back. We've got a doe kitting next week. I think like the 16th is when I'm gonna induce her for, which she's whew, she's gravid. She is one large marge. Our nice doe Thea there. She's gonna be kitting, and hopefully she's got a doe or two in there for me and others. And then I've been kind of burning the candle at both ends, Danielle, with a new gig added onto my already, my other job. I can't, it's not that I can't, but I don't want to really get into specifics, just because, the fan clubs out there who have made life enjoyable. But yeah, it's a really fun job. I have 0 days off right now. Just trying to rake in that moolah. And yeah, we're just kind of going at it. We have started to milk our old doe Gem, our 11-year-old, once a day. We're gonna start. She's pumping milk, so I can't just stop, unfortunately. So, but she's down to once a day. We're gonna drive her off. She's shown that she's just ready to be retired. So we're gonna do that for her.
Nice. No, I mean, she had her babies. You don't need her milk. And so, as long as you can safely do that, which sounds like you are in the process of that, I think it's great.
Yeah, and we got Thea kidding here soon, so we'll have more milk. We got rid of our buck kids, Jem's buck kids. They went to taco camp for the summer. And then we have a new Nubian guest that I have to find time to pick up. But I gotta pick
Might be a
him up.
good idea.
Yeah, I do have to do that. I gotta carve out a day. It might be like Sunday night or something. Anyway, we'll talk about that off air. But yeah, so I'll have those bucks are gone. I'll have this new buck coming in, but I'm not really worried because if Thea has a present for somebody else, they're going to leave before I really need the milk. Like they're literally gonna leave the weekend after she gets. So
Okay.
it'll be fun. But yeah, and then and we're also getting rid of another doe kid. Not getting rid, but we've sold another doe kid, so she's gonna be leaving. It's gonna be a whole thing. So actually, Danielle, we'll talk off air, but I think the 20th or 21st is when we can make that exchange.
Okay.
So
Was okay.
yeah, semen tanks, kids, all that good stuff.
Oh, okay. All right, that works.
We'll have to talk off air. Planning, planning.
Sometimes we only talk on the podcast because that's all John can talk to me. So.
Well, no, I've admittedly, I'm kind of, I've been very busy, and so have you. Like it's that time of year,
Yeah.
so I also have to carve out time to get goats tested for Connecticut shows and stuff like that. So it's just like, holy cow. But yeah, I need to make a list.
And then you're going to have to shave them, and then you're going to have to trim their feet, and then you're going to have to clean out your trailer, and then you're going to have to make sure your trailer is good for the show, and just it goes on and on and on.
And then all of a sudden it's nationals.
Exactly.
But I might have access to a swanky trailer though this year. We'll see.
Oh, look at
Yeah.
you.
The perks of the job. Danielle, add good news. Not much going on, right?
It's quiet. I do
Very
have to
quiet.
say, I've seen some things that are exciting and hopefully mean that progress is coming, is slowly. But
What have you seen?
I've seen things. Let's leave
Okay.
it at that.
Okay.
But
All right. I haven't
positive
seen.
things that I think there's still a few little quirks going on, but things are progressing behind the scenes. So sometimes quiet could be good, but
Now,
we'll
last time
see.
it was this quiet, it wasn't good, but that's just, I'm gonna leave it at that. But I'm sure everybody's doing a great job. Just like an update. Give us an update, guys. Come on. We love you. Anyway, that's it for Agca News. Let's just jump right in to the Mark Baden episode part two.
I think sometimes, though, people just go, oh, well, her medial suspensory ligament. And it's more probably that definition between the halves and that they're talking about with that, oh, it just needs a little bit more time to develop, or she's too swollen right now to evaluate it. Or they're just not frankly looking at, is there that definition between the halves? Is there that separation? I mean, I think the same goes for teat placement as well. So often you're going to hear people, oh, give her another freshening, and those teats are going to drop down a little bit more, or they're going to move from the side. I don't necessarily know. I mean, what is your opinion on that kind of idea that a little more capacity, maybe those teats will move from right by her legs down and be magically perfectly placed on that udder floor?
Well, everyone likes to play, dairy goat mammary surgeon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone likes to, a goat's on the milk stand and then they take their finger and then they pull up. Oh yeah, if she had medial, perfect. Yeah, perfect medial and perfect teat placement, right? So what is it? Is it the medial or is it the teat placement? Or is it a combination? You can have both be bad. Both can be lacking, right? And both can be excellent. And of course, the purpose of the medial, besides holding that mammary system above the hock and high into the escutcheon, because we want the mammary system, out of harm's way, because the higher that the udder floor and the orifice is, the lower the somatic cell count. And so, because no one wants to have mastitis on the prettiest udder, or even a highly functional udder. You don't make money on a doe that has mastitis. And so data, there's many articles in the Journal of Dairy Science about, that's why teat length is important. That's why it's so important that we finish teat length for a linear appraisal trait that it has been passed by the board of directors, that has been tasked to our performance programs manager to work with the CDCB to bring teat length to be a PTA fully reliability calculated trait to the membership by November. And I intentionally say that in this podcast because we all would benefit if we can get that over the hurdle. And just an update on that is that CDCB has been hiring, they were hiring a new research assistant, and that was one of the tasks that new hire was going to be tasked with. So there still is time. So fingers crossed that we will finally see that delivered. But you want the udder floor so you can fit the bucket under there, even a Nigerian dwarf. You want the ease of milking, but also the reason you want the cleft is for the proper drainage of the mammary system, right? Because often, as you said, Daniel, I've had a first freshener, it was a little swollen, and she has a strong medial, but I found it's like, oh, I've got to like milk her kind of weird to get that udder floor to drain. Right. So
Right.
all the no pooling up of milk, but that's the purpose, right? Is for udder health, holding, the medial's purpose is to hold, and our scorecard says that, we want the entire mammary system held well above the hock. well above the hack for utter depth score would be a 35 in linear. Personally, I think that's too high of a number, but that's, you know, that's why we all breed for what we personally want. But if you're putting all of our programs together and the phraseology and the terminology that we have in our documents, linear appraisal SOP, our unified scorecard, those type of things. So I'm just trying to tie that all together for you. But it's because you want a mammary system that is made correctly, so that way it doesn't take you 2 hours to milk, you know, just two goats, that you can, that doesn't have health issues. And so that's the importance of that medial. And then to go into, you know, the medial and then the teat placement, it's like, well, but you have to kind of look, how functional is this mammary system? If it's a real small udder, you know, or a first freshener, and you're going like, oh, well, she came into more milk, you know, or, you know, but it's like, well, is the whole udder going to grow, or is it just the size of the udder is adequate, but her capacity is low? It's like, well, I mean, you have to really have an honest conversation with yourself when you're evaluating these animals to see, it's like, well, what do I need to work on? Now, odds are you need to work on your teat placement more than the medial, because when you look at all animals, all mammals, right, that they're nursing their young. I was in Africa earlier this year. And so you look at animals, at the most basic, you're looking at over, you know, millions of wildebeest, right? And so, right, they've got to have a real strong medial, right? Because, you know, that they've got to run, you know, they can't have a cheetah or a leopard catch them, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and those, and their offspring are nursing all the time because they've got to run every day. And so they can't have this sedentary, beautiful, voluptuous dairy cow or dairy goat mammary system. But they've, you know, so when I say as far as teats or medial, well, the medial's there, because if you have a medial failure, the goat wouldn't survive. The udder would drag on the floor and would rip open. Or so pretty much when you're looking at, you know, with normal production, you can have them be hand in hand, but, you know, you just with evaluation, if the teats are out to the side and they're out to the side, and you don't want a 5-inch medial, I mean, that's not attractive, you know, and you're losing out on the opportunity for high capacity of that mammary system. That's why, you know, you're looking for a strong medial, you know, not like excessive division of the udder halves when viewed from behind.
I want to ask next, people often say that the soft tissue part of the goat, aka the udder, is the easiest or is easier to improve than, let's say, a general appearance issue. So if you have a doe you really like everything else about her besides her udder, are you personally willing to keep her in your breeding program, or is it more situational? How do you kind of balance that all out in your own herd?
I'm unashamedly a mammary system breeder first. And I think that I'll never go wrong personally by doing that. And as we started our conversation today, you know, talking about function, because again, whether you're a commercial operator and, you know, being at my friend's, you know, dairy that milks over 1,000 goats, you know, obviously milk production is very important. Or if you're a hobbyist, you know, you never go wrong having the milk. Well, you have to have the mammary system. And so if you have the milk, you can make cheese, yogurt for your own use. You can make soap at, you know, at markets, or you can sell any products. And if this goat isn't aesthetically beautiful for my show ring vanity, I can sell her to a commercial producer. I haven't sold a milker for less than $600 for 8 or 9 years. Because the commercial producers that buy from me, I show them my milk records. I go, this goat milks 11 pounds. And they look at it, they go, I can make money on that. And I don't have to wait for a dairy run that's only paying $250 or $300. So you never go wrong breeding for milk. You know, and that's my friends Don and Judy Hoy, Lucky Star, La Mancha's, you know, that's before they go, you never wrong breeding for milk. And when you really look at, you got to pay your feed bill, you got to pay your chore help so you can go to a goat show. And so the milk, you're never wrong breeding for function. And so mammary system for me, it's really important because it helps my revenue, my bottom line on goats I don't keep. And it's a challenge that I enjoy because in our association, the American Dairy Goat Association, our programs that we have, even in this NG environment, mammary, you can breed and improve your mammary systems. No excuses. You can do it. You can't blame it on NG. You have the availability to go and look at all that data at CDCB, and you can find that information and you can breed a better, you can see generational improvements in mammary system in all of our mammary traits. Plus milk production, milk records, you know, DHIR. And while we may not have star awards through format four with NG, you can still go to cdcb.com and you can get that information. And so mammary system, yes, you can make improvements. And when we finish teat length, if you speak to the linear appraisal co-chairs or any member of the linear appraisal committee, that you can see that listing in the ADGA directory that is available to members in the members only section online. You can see that in the strategic plan is that we want to be like our cousins in cattle. We want to have a mammary composite. And we can do that because we cover the mammary system. We have so many, it's not an emotional structural trait, right? It's actually, how high is it? How wide is it? You know, how long are the teats? How wide are they? We have these scales. And so we really do have resources that you can use to improve mammary system. And so for me, you know, when I look at, you know, clearly, you know, you guys want to talk to me, you want to talk about udder. And so, and it's fun, you know, I can talk about them till 4 a.m. with you. And because I'm not a liar. I mean, you know, and that's the thing. People give me a lot of flack about the 40 trifecta. I go, oh, go ahead. I go, if you don't want to work that hard, don't. I'm willing to work hard. You know, I'm willing to find it. I'm willing to acknowledge and be excited about it. And I don't care if it's not my breed or not. I go, hey, look at that. You know, and it's fun when I've, you know, been at shows and breeders of other breeds, and they say, who has one in my breed or whatever? I go, oh, I can't really tell you because, you know, when I was an appraiser, because, you know, I can't divulge that information. I go, but you really should go to adgagenetics.org and search this way. And maybe you're going to see a goat, maybe on page 2, the second goat. I go, look there. You know, I try to give a hint for these people. They really want to accept the challenge and improve these goats. But, you know, there's people who think I'm a lousy showman. There's
what?
Sometimes I've probably shown, I don't know, 17 different national champions or whatever for multiple people. And it's a real compliment to be asked. And it's fun. It is fun. And it's fun to, you know, look at these goats and how can you enhance them in a way. I can't really show the udder. The udder is what it is. It is. And so that's the whole thing. There's certain traits in my own personal breeding program that I'm breeding for, and other ones I go, I can hide that. And any great showman will say the same thing. All the greats out there in our association that you're going to see in July in the ring, or that you saw last year, if they're not making the trip this year, there's always certain commentary. Oh, yeah, that goat won because so-and-so. And then did you see her in the lineup when they showed a different one? She didn't look the same. There's always that commentary. But that's why we've all got traits to breed for, right? But when you're showing, as long as that goat's full, that udder is what it is. And so to me, you've got to walk in with an outstanding functional mammary system. And because if my mammary is better than my competition and I can show better than them, I'm probably going to win. And that's not arrogance. It's the truth. And that's why go to showmanship clinics, be excited, go to CDCB, go read articles on Journal of Dairy Science. You can do it. You can do it in Oberhasli. You can do it even if your favorite herds don't appraise or aren't on milk test. You can learn these things through SOPs and you can do your own evaluations. It may take a little bit more math and a little bit more paperwork, you know, handwriting for you, you can do it. And so to me, breeding for the udder, you've got to have that before you put the goats in the trailer, because then it's up to your arm.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
if you think about it, and obviously, I don't know, I like to see the goats on the move, and that can hide, you know, show flaws a little bit more than a skilled handler sometimes can hide them. But that mammary system, kind of as you said, is not really going to change very much, but is an easy way. I mean, it's one of the larger point categories on the scorecard too, at 35 points, but it's an easy way to allow a doe to stand out, especially in that national show ring where there are a lot of goats in that ring. Seeing that mammary system placed well, teep placement correct, high rear udder, capacity in that mammary system.
Because exactly. So think about just like what you said, Danielle. So think about what we're looking at in Louisville, potentially the Nigerian dwarf two-year-old class. In 2021, I think there was, 112 two-year-olds in that class? Absolutely beautiful doe that won the class from Southern California. I can see she's a beautiful color. It's my favorite, like apricot golden color. That doe of it's a Wolf Van doe.
She's one of my favorites. I forget her name.
I know what her son's name is, because I've told a lot of people. I go, use that buck. I go, my gosh, if you got to get a doe like his mother, oh my gosh. Anyway, but if you want to stand out, and they're only going to take not even 10%, 10% of the entrants in that class, right? Well, I'm sorry, blue eyes and moon spots aren't going to get you in the cut.
Right.
But let me tell you, 40 udder is going to, I mean, at least she functions and she milks and it's hot, right? And if you're all standing side by side, think of how often you are standing still at the national show. Yes, you're walking, but in those big classes, we have hard times keeping the goats moving.
Right.
And Nubians, and that is the stress for this year's National Show Committee, having Nubians and Nigerians at the same time. Now, the great fortune is Louisville facility, they probably can make it bigger, but right. At other places we can't necessarily. And so right. I mean, if you're stopping, starting, hey, if that mammary system looks good, you're probably gonna get pulled in, And so because you're not always, and that's why, sadly, especially in kid classes, don't have them walking on their hind legs, because it's I finally get to see these goats move, so make sure they're level and they've got a good back, and because that's what you're seeing in side profile. But in a class of 122-year-olds potentially out there, and where they're all lined up side by side, and they're looking at for a high purport because the ring is so full, right? It's going to be so full in some of those classes. Now, John, you don't have that problem typically in Oberheisley, but a Nubian and Nigerian, you're going to have that problem. And I'm not on either one of those breeds this year. I'm not an Oberheisley either. So I'm not speaking about that. I mean, fingers crossed. I hope the Alpine ring is jam packed full. I hope we have more Alpines than Nigerians. That'd be wonderful. But you're going to be inside profile, and you're going to be side by side, and in milkers, they're going to be looking at the rear udder more than they are at the front end and front legs. So right. If your goal is national show validation, or to, you want to be considered in the conversation of I made the cut. Now I really see I am making improvements, and this is what I need to do. Well, you need your goat to stay out there so she can be compared. And so that beautiful view when you're milking from behind every day, it hopefully is aesthetically pleasing and very functional mammary system. So, I say mammary all the way. I hope that we follow cattle and that one day mammary system will be even higher than 35 points, because I think that that's what our industry is. It's about production and milk. And when now it takes a lot to change stuff, right? Your conversation, we finally broke, back and rump off. But you know, that takes a whole lot of different change. But when you look at what cattle, I mean, they have a feet and leg component, and, you know, they don't have, you know, points for all the different things in general appearance that we do. And it just, it's a conversation of like, what do we really need? You know, what tools do our members need? And what does our industry need to take dairy goats forward, you know, the next 100 years? You know, ADGA began in 1904, the American Milk Goat Registry Association. So, you know, and our classification and linear program, you know, we've only had that for just, you know, 48 years or so. So this is kind of new. We've had milk records even longer. So where are we going to go? We're always going to have a mammary system. We're always going to have these mammary traits, and we have, and you can paint or draw, you know, your ideal mammary system. And we have scales for those linear traits, that show you, you know, you could, from the numbers, you could draw the mammary system. You could not draw the body from our linear data. You could not. I wish we could, but, you know, that's not the resources, the tools that we have at this time right now for our membership and for our colleagues in the dairy goat industry in the United States.
No, that's so true. And I do think that's an important point, because there are a lot of things from that linear data that you can tell about how the animal looks in terms of, okay, you know, what are we seeing in strength? And like, there are those great diagrams out there in the SOP, but you're not factoring in different aspects of the general appearance into that to say, okay, this is exactly what she looks like. But that mammary system, it is, all right, how high is the rear udder? Where are the teats placed? How, I mean, you really do break it down into, you can draw it. And that isn't, I've never thought of it that way completely before, but I completely agree with that. I want to ask a question about, for those who are kind of struggling with maybe a doe that just from a line that may not have a particularly strong mammary system, how long in general have you found it takes to fix them to not only be productive, but competitive? I mean, some people say, oh, it takes a generation, but I think we've all had animals where several generations of using strong udder bucks, quote unquote, something breaks down in it and you're seeing progress, but maybe not enough to kind of keep it going.
So Danielle, you win the best question award of the segment, because
okay, well, actually, well, good, we're gonna, I stole John's question. That was a John question originally. I will give him credit, but I happen to be the one asking. So
okay, it was your turn.
Yeah,
so that is okay. So I'm just gonna. It always saddens me. I feel I'm a very humble dairy goat owner. I'm very excited and I love my goats. I really do. And I've had dairy goats for 44 years, my entire adolescent and adult life. But I started with such less than exciting goats and no money. And that's why I hope, and I've been very intentional to try and say this inspirationally. I know I said it in this podcast, but I believe I've said it in the other two as well with you. But, you know, that's why I say the words, you can do it too. I really am trying to be the cheerleader. I don't care what breed you have. You can do it. Don't think you can't. And I know how it is to not have money. I know how it is to not be able to afford a spotlight sale goat or a Colorama sale goat. I know what it's like not to, I'd love to use that semen, but I don't own a tank. Well, I got a job on a dairy and I AI'd all their goats for them. And that's how I learned how to AI. And I kept my semen in their tanks. They were very nice. But you know what? It takes time and it takes planning. And so my first goats, every goat I have is from a 4-H goat that was horrible. That is from a P, as in poor, as in 60 points or lower. Scoring mammary system, because there was no money to just sell them all and start over. And that was in the 70s and 80s, and life was different. And it was just, and that's why, you know, that's why I am a nerd, and that's why I mentioned Journal of Dairy Science. I go, there's ways you can learn this. There's ways to apply cattle philosophy and cattle breedings and using PTAs, predicted transmitted abilities and reliabilities. There's ways to improve your chances, but it's not an exact thing. So it's exciting, but these first fresheners that are freshening now, this is the fruits of your thought process 5 and 10 years ago when you bought a buck or when you bought semen and when you did the breeding how many years until you finally got a doe kid from that breeding. And then she didn't die or something happened, right? And you finally get to see it. So this is, you know, that's why the reward you get now, whether it's in the show ring or in Louisville at the National Show or on appraisal day or on a completed lactation that, oh, yeah, she did milk 3,800 pounds and 160 of fat. You know, she met my goals and all that. But that's your reward for your thoughts that were, for me, sometimes 15 years ago, semen that I've been sitting on. So I try to be inspirational. You can do that. And how long do you wait? And so, but mammary system, I think that it really depends. We don't see goats of such poor quality at our goat shows very often anymore. It's just very different because, you know, having three, the emotional disappointment of coming in last in three consecutive rings or 2 days, four times, you know, a double ring show Saturday and Sunday. I mean, it was so different in the 80s because you showed under one judge, you know, and there weren't a lot of judges. And so I think that now people really, they realize, and it's like, I'm never going to get to the front line. I'm never going to get to the front of the class. And so then they are willing to start over and people do make the investment. And plus, but there's so much access, immediate access. You can be in the ring. Your phone is going off. Facebook posts and Instagram pictures of this doe, this beautiful udder doe is in New York. And I can see her in the ring in Washington because people are posting pictures instantly. And people are very savvy now. They tell their judge friends, if you see anything, this is the traits I'm looking for. And if when you're a judge and you see it, you know, let me know, you know, that kind of, and so the networking and the ability to share pictures via text message and email is so different compared to people using actual Kodak and going to, you know, 1 hour photo booths were, you know, even rare. And that's how old I am. I'm sorry. You know, you're talking to an old guy, you know, but So you can do it and make the improvements. So how long does it take, right? So I guess my honest advice is it depends. Really use strategy. It's like, which traits are fixable? What things are fixable, right? First, again, assuming good basic management, you know, have that honest conversation with yourself. You're never going to improve even a poor or mediocre udder if you don't have good basic management, or if you have too many goats and not enough shelter, or if you know you can't afford to buy enough hay. You always can afford to buy enough hay, or you can always get because when I see these posts around the country, and I've been fortunate to travel all over the country, and I understand why they're saying this, but it's like, no, maybe you just need to have four less goats than you can pay to have that hay shipped in. And because we want, you know, but who wants to be told I can't have what I want, right? I want to keep, you know, 12 goats in milk so I have a full show string on both of my breeds or whatever. That's great that you want to find a partner or benefactor or something like that. But so assuming the management is there and your feed and health management is good, then it's like, what traits are you looking at? And so I always, and the reason I like this question that you asked, because when I have customers who want to buy a buck from me, I'm always amazed that they don't ask me the right questions. And I'm going like, why didn't they ask me this? And so I kind of have this, you know, sometimes I'll redirect them. It's like, you don't want to buy a buck out of my reserve best udder doe and for at the national show in first place. I go, that's not what you need. And for the money, I mean, you might, that should be maybe your second or your third buck, but not your first buck. So it's like getting your buck lineup in order and where you are. And so I think that looking at what is your goal, I always tell customers, you have to pick two traits in mammary system that you want to see this buck improve. And that's for semen that you purchase or a buck, because I want my customers to be happy. I want my customers to want to buy another follow-up buck from me. And you know why? And this, any great breeder wants that, because we need a potential future herd sire ourselves, or we want to buy semen back. We want to try something for line breeding. And you have a little bit of outcross, but it's related to mine. So if you succeed, I might succeed. So I'm not saying that, you know, to be disingenuous. Sincerely, it's like, we want to see, and then, oh, that cross worked. Hey, then maybe I might try that too. So it's, I think that, you know, you can see the improvements, but you've got to have two traits. So I always say, I go like, well, what's your, and then I'm not sure. I go, okay, then what's your pet peeve? What do you hate? And so then I'll go that way. I go like, oh, well, and so like, someone said, I want Ford. I go, great. I go, no problem. I go, I got Ford on every dough line. No problem. I go, what do you care about teats then? Oh, I hate big teats. I go, okay, no problem. This one dough line is not for you. You might get, you know, so you kind of have to look at that, manage your expectations. But I think that, so listening to one of your other guests on their philosophy. And so I think it's, and I have a customer coming on Saturday who is new to dairy goats. They have a lot of horse breeding experience. This concept of, are you an outcross breeder or are you a line breeder? And do you really understand the concept of line breeding? And when you're line breeding, what traits are you trying to bring in to accentuate or become more consistent upon? And so some of that, you don't have to look at dairy goat breeding programs necessarily if you don't quite understand that concept. And so you can look at other, even dog breeders too, you know, so you can look at different species of animals to kind of like, you know, like, well, how does that work in another species? And it's like, maybe I should try that too. So diversifying your gene pool, I can see how that's necessary at times, but I think that you can really see mammary improvements in my own very simple, humble breeding herd. The very first buck that I ever bought was a Sodium Oak Saison son, and he was ugly. and his daughter, and Saison himself was, you know, of repute, you know, one of the best, most successful bucks of alpinedom. And he wasn't pretty either. There's only a picture of him standing on a fence line where you see his head, because Mary Connersman said he was so ugly. Anyway, but that buck, and I didn't have a very big herd at the time, and I had very few daughters, but you know what that buck did? That buck gave me milk. I got function and production. And you know, and then I went back to the same breeder and I flew there, and ironically lived here in Washington. I lived in Ohio and the breeder was here in Washington State. And I came out and I wanted to see those goats in person. And there was a goat I totally wasn't didn't know anything about. And I go like, would you breed that doe to that buck? And she said, sure. And she did, and changed my herd, because there was some consistency of what she was breeding for in multiple generations. And my second buck was a Sodium Oaks Wairika son. And so understanding line breeding and in mammary system, that can be really helpful, particularly if you're just starting out, and people, members who are just starting out, what do they have access to? The goats people are willing to sell. And when they're starting out, especially their 4-H'ers, it's like, well, I don't know if my kids really want to do this, so I don't really want to spend a whole lot of money on this. We'll see. Now, there are parents who, you know, sky's the limit on price, but, you know, that's not the budget for everyone. So I think that you really have to, you know, two generations in my herd. I mean, I went in two generations from a poor mammary to, I know I went to a very good mammary. I'd have to look back to see if I went to an excellent, but I'd say I know I went from poor to very good. And, you know, that's, you know, four categories up there. And I know in three generations, I went to an utter placement in a national show. Oh, wow. It can be done. I mean, my goats they're very simple. You know, they're all from my sister's 4-H, my sister's $45 4-H goat. They aren't even mine. That's my whole kind of a thing. So I do think of my sister every time I go out and do chores. I go, Sharon, anyway.
I had a line that I cut out completely because in Three Generations, using bucks from one of the best Oberhasli mammary farms there are, Overboard, you know, I wasn't seeing the changes that I needed. So I cut out that line, and it's unfortunate because I sold a dry yearling and she freshened this year and she was gangbusters, but it was one out of so many.
No, but this is all about dominant and recessive traits. I mean, your mm-hmm. doe line, on that one doe line, you know, he didn't win in the tug of war of genetics. Right. You know? Yep. She won. And that's why the whole line breeding thing. And I really only do Facebook. I mean, I have an Instagram, but I've never made one post. All these people, you know, I get messages. So and so's following. I go like, you're not going to enjoy this. I never posted anything. and I have I get all these messages from Snapchat. I've never made a Snapchat post or anything, but Julie Mathis was, you know, posting some great nostalgia pictures and about handwritten pedigrees. And, you know, and I smiled really big, you know, why I go like, oh yeah, I remember doing that. And so that's what I'm talking about, line breeding. And so the ways, you know, that we used to do it, and, you know, I have got drawers full of old stuff and just be kind of sacrilegious to get rid of it. And it's still, I haven't opened up those drawers in years, but it's kind of like when I see other people post stuff, it tempts me to go up there if I've got time to look at that. So the whole line breeding thing, and I think that if you haven't already, and I apologize if I'm not recalling this correctly, but if you haven't done a podcast on what really is line breeding, or maybe take from your listeners, you know, like questions you were afraid to ask and will ask for you, because there's some misconceptions about line breeding or how it's done, and then, you know, when does it cross over into inbreeding? And maybe that's necessary, maybe it isn't. You know, speaking of which, you know, on these first fresheners, you know, that I have out of this new sire, one is 20%, you know, which is pretty high. And I go, well, I got to try something new. I've never done that before. And we'll see if I like it or not. And she freshened. And I looked at that rear and I go, wow. I go, hey, I got that. And so, yeah, try stuff. But you know, understand line breeding and yeah, two generations. And if you don't see the needle move on your traits of emphasis, and again, you know, when you look at, you know, you got fore udder, rear udder, udder depth, teat placement, teat diameter, teat length, you know, medial. You've got seven linear mammary traits, and you're picking two for, you know, buck one of your breeding program. Well, don't abandon those two traits on buck two that you purchase. Reinforce that and then add a third trait. I mean, you don't, because mm-hmm. otherwise you may as well just be outcross. It's like, well, you do want to see some consistency. And so, you know, that's why, and I think I said this to you, John, before, it's like, well, you try to find a hallmark in a breeding program and it's like, okay, well, I want to be known as the American Alpine four udder, you know, breeding program. It's like, well, everyone needs a four udder, so sooner or later, get a buck from me. And it's like, oh, well, it helps you get a buck sale. It's like, if other people say, yep, that's right, he's got multiple generations and I need to fix four udder, if that's what comes up on your bingo card that you need to improve on your goats, it's like, hey, I've got one of those. And oh, and also it milks, it functions. Oh, and also it's got good teat placement. You know, maybe that fits your bill. You know, sorry they're not pulled, or sorry it's the wrong color. Or whatever. Hey, but if you're really being systematic by traits, but really, and you know which breeding programs work together that use similar lines. So it's not that you have to go shopping at the same house. I know an old 1980s philosophy. There was a very famous alpine herd in the state of Ohio, and they did have beautiful goats. They had beautiful alpines, but there was lots of stories, and I won't say the name because I was a child. I didn't speak with them, but you know, you heard all these stories and these rumors about in their sales list, they would, and I do know this was said, they recommended, I'll just say they recommended. Some people said, they said you had to, but you know, it's sound advice. They said, well, you should buy $3 from us. Not all three this year, but it's like, find some consistency. And there's some merit to that thought process.
Yeah.
And whether you want to buy an Overboard buck from Kurt, John, but maybe you're going to buy, you know, from someone else, but they've also bought bucks from him. So it doesn't have to have the same herd name, but you know, they're using the same things or whatever in Nubians, you know? So, you know, and again, I apologize. I'm not trying to focus on one herd name or one breed or one breeding program, but people network and people are happy to share photos, and there's lots of camaraderie around the nation. Well, and globally, you know, too, I have friends that in Mexico that when I went and judged a show in Mexico last year, and he said to me, he goes, I want to buy I want to buy a buck from you every year for 4 years. And I said, no problem. I go, we'll set you up. And he has commercial dairy, and he said, he wants milk. And he go, and this is what I want. I go, no problem. And so I sent him a buck last year, and I'm so excited about, you know, oh, and this is the next one you're going to get. And I can't wait like 5 years from now and see what they make. You know, and that's fun and exciting, you know, and exciting. Again, well, because you want them to succeed, because it's like, oh yeah, that does work. And, you know, other people have different resources, whether they can freshen 100 goats. I can't freshen 100 goats. And so I think that you can buy an Utterbuck and he can make an improvement, you know, in one generation. But the last thing I'll say on this great question is too, but also be mindful on timeliness too. So another true story, and I'm mentioning sodium oxacin. I finally got sodium oxacin in my career and in my own tank. And I was, oh, I don't have a good enough doe to use him yet. And I waited 15 years. And then I had my very first senior doe, a milking class winner at a national show in 2009. So then I finally felt personally validated. Oh, I can use the oxacin semen. I waited too long. And the whole breed has improved, you know? And so like now, I mean, there's still oxacin semen out there, not as much as there used to be, but that's not who's winning best doe and show. I tell you, 20 years ago, oxacin daughters were winning best doe and show. 30 years ago, they were winning a national champion. But the breed now, there are buck kids just as good as some of those hallmark bucks of the 1980s and 90s. And especially like in smaller gene pool breeds, such as Oberhasli. I mean, are you going to go back and use a 40-year-old Oberhasli buck, John?
No.
Great. So for a lot of the breeds, the baseline of the breed, the average buck is as good as the greatest buck 40 years ago. And so that's why we see usually leading up to the national show or convention, you know, people are always saying, oh, I've got this, you know, they put their semen list out of their gems of the past. And I see certain bucks that show up and I go, yeah, that buck I'd be interested. I go, but not at that price point. He's not $250 worthy in 2024. I mean, but again, that's all supply and demand. You know, some people may think, but it's like, you know, there's buck kids who do this much. But I mean, if you really want to, and there was a buck for nostalgia at last year's convention. I'll say this, I want to do a Back to the Future line. I have a philosophy on now that my herd is consistent and I have some good goats now. I mean, when I had really mediocre goats and there were wonderful people, Mary Lou Holscher Yoder of Metamorin Alpines, and she still has Alpines in Central Ohio, and it was really influential. She was so nice and let me use her bucks. They made huge improvements, but they didn't really win. I wonder now, oh, if I could use that buck bred to a good goat, not a 75 caliber goat, what would he do? So that's kind of my Back to the Future, but also kind of distant line breeding. So that's kind of a fun thing. But this person had the semen of a buck that it's like, oh, I want to use that. They wanted like, we'll say they wanted $100 a straw for it. I go like, I guarantee you, I'm the only person in the country who would be willing to use this buck. No one knows what it is. This buck is, you know, 35 years old, you know? So sometimes you have to have a conversation with people and they're willing to let go of these gems of the past kind of a thing. So just that, sorry, that's a side note, but that it is related to your, how long does it take to make improvements kind of a thing. That takes consideration of being real specific about traits. But then also don't bang your head against the wall. There's some traits really look at breeding for improvement. And then there's some traits that call for it and look for the repeatability. And if you have a dominant doe line, you know, that the whole concept of, you know, tug of war, you know, think about the buck and the doe, it's a tug of war, you know, which genes will be expressed in the kids from that mating. And I think that, you know, you'll be able to, and also don't forget what your thought process was. Well, I bought this buck for this reason. Did that buck deliver on it? Yes, or, you know, give them a report card kind of a thing. And so I think that's kind of the relationship of buyers and sellers. When you're shop, all sellers want you to be successful. They really do, because it's their pride and their herd name going out there. And so what are the traits that you really want? I mean, you know, but don't give too long of a laundry list, you know, be realistic about it. And then do the report card. Did you get what you wanted? Yeah, I did. Well, go back and get you some more. I like, you know, second helpings, you know, of ice cream. So anyway.
And that's some solid advice to end this on. This has been amazing. One that I'm going to listen to not only when editing, but probably at least one or two times after editing. This has been awesome. There's two things I want to bring up. First of all, there's no other guest that I would want to talk about this. That's my pun for the day. And but, also the dough that we were thinking of was GCH Woofavin CQ Ginger Root. So
Ginger Root. That's right.
Yep. That's her.
Perfect name, because she is a ginger, isn't she?
She sure is. I love that dough. Mark, if people wanted to find you and your herd on Facebook and online, where can they do that?
So I'm at olentangyalpines.com, and I have a Facebook page under olentangyalpines. And if you can't understand when I say Olentangy, it's the Ohio River Valley that goes through the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. So that's the name of the river, Olentangy.
Perfect. And again, thank you so much for being on. This has been amazing, and I can't wait to listen to it again.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Danielle, if folks wanted to find us on the old interwebs, where can they do that?
You can find us on the web by looking up DairyGoatPodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast. We are on Instagram and TikTok. If you search Ringside Podcasts, we will pop up, and you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, be sure to subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us, and we appreciate it.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, everybody, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
And I guess I'm a newbie and owner now. We'll catch you on the next one.
Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.